This is SB Nation Radio.
Great moments are born from great opportunity.
A new generation of sports radio.
This is the Tony D Show.
Now it's time to see who has the heart.
This is our countdown to kickoff featuring the Tennessee Titans. Live from the Quicken Loan Studios in New Jersey, here's Tony Desiri.
Glad to be with us here on SB Nation Radio. I am Tony D, taking you up for the next 2 hours. And that's right, we're doing the Tennessee Titans today. A team that technically had the number one overall pick in last year's draft, but because they got a new general manager who wasn't afraid to wheel and deal, and they didn't need a quarterback, and they went to go find a team that wanted a quarterback, they ended up getting a nice ransom for that number one pick from the LA Rams. But what do they do with it? They bring in DeMarco Murray. They're trying to emerge from the shadows of just a mediocre, awful seasons that have just had the team stuck in a rut. So we'll preview the Tennessee Titans in the show today. It's our countdown to kickoff where we're breaking down a team every day all the way through to the start of the NFL season. Our telephone number to join us, 800-777-2907. I got to tell you, yes, last night was one of those cool parent nights as a sports guy. Last night, my kids and my wife were all kind of milling around the house, doing their own thing, getting ready for the work week up ahead. My kids were upstairs doing whatever. My wife was getting ready for work. And I yelled for everybody to come downstairs because the Olympics were on, track and field was on, and I wanted everybody in the house to see Usain Bolt. So I said, hey, guys, come on down. Come on down. You got to see Usain Bolt. I said, he's about ready to run the 100 meter. You got to watch this. And so my kids, they were interested in it. And my wife was like, okay. So we came down to watch the 100 meters. And I got to tell you, for 10 seconds, it is the most exciting 10 seconds that you have in sports. Now, I don't know much about running. I'm not a sprinter. I never was a sprinter. I never was a track guy. So I just observe, and my brain says, this doesn't look right. And that's how I just process it. So initially, when Usain Bolt jumped off the blocks, you could tell that he didn't jump off the blocks very well. That he didn't get a very good start. And even the sort of amateur eye that I have noticed that that could have been a problem for him. That just that initial jump wasn't as smooth as other runners. But my God, did he make up for it. When he hits that top speed, it's the most exciting thing. Now, obviously Michael Phelps and all the medals and all the wins and the great emotion that he's brought propels him up the list of Olympic athletes. But Usain Bolt is right there. This is a very, very notifiable event, the 100 meters. It's one of those marquee moments in the Olympic Games. Track and field is where the Olympic Games really makes its bread and butter. It's swimming and track and field, and there are other events that pick up a lot of steam and a lot of attention. But the reason track and field is in the second week is that's really where the Olympics makes its bread and butter. And Usain Bolt in that event is must-see TV on 100 levels, even though it lasts 10 seconds. I was really glad that my kids were able to watch this because even afterwards, we all kind of sat around and went, that's pretty amazing. That was pretty amazing. Third straight Olympics that he's won a gold. And this is what the Olympics does best. It gathers you for these one moments that you don't get to see very often. You get to see once every 4 years, maybe. If somebody else had won the 100 meter, it would have been a big upset. We would be breaking down how he didn't get off the blocks as well enough to reach the acceleration. But it was irrelevant because once he got to the top speed, it was a sight to see. It's crazy. Now, we're heading into the home stretch of the Olympics. We've got another week to go. And then it's all done and it'll be wrapped up. And I'm starting to wonder, as I look at the last week or so of these games, have we been missing the larger stories from Rio that we thought we were going to get inundated with before the Olympics started? Because all the way up to the Olympic Games, we have heard nothing but doom and gloom, nothing but awfulness. This is horrible for Rio. This is going to paint Rio in a bad light. This is going to make Rio a mess. And so far, and I'll get to other stories that may prove otherwise, but so far, overall, this seems to be something that has been off the radar, and not only off the radar, but doesn't seem to be a concern from anybody involved, from the athletes to the coaches to the fans to the television partnerships. It seems as if these Olympics are going to go off without too much of a hitch. Now, there are some things that pop up. We've been hearing about the green water in the pool and whatnot. And we'll get to the holdup of Ryan Lochte in a minute. But otherwise, Where are the day in and day out stories of a city that wasn't ready to pull this off, that absolutely fell apart, dropped the ball completely? A government that just could not get this done, a recession that was going to prevent these buildings from being built. So far, it looks very, very good. Now, granted, I know propaganda and I know how it works. If I'm not seeing it, it doesn't mean it doesn't exist. If it's not talked about, it doesn't mean it doesn't exist. But I feel like there's enough people in Rio that somebody would say, hey, you guys are not seeing the full picture here. Are we getting the real image of what's going on in a city that had real problems with these games to start with? Because all the problems that people were talking about the city having hosting these games seems like they wouldn't be cleaned up immediately. There's still trash in the ocean. There's still sewage in the ocean. The city is still in a recession. The government has still got some issues. There are still some construction woes. Traffic is a nightmare. There is still rampant crime. Those things don't magically disappear in the 2 weeks the world shows up. If anything, the attention gets focused on like a magnifying glass on the things that you are trying to cover up. But so far, I've enjoyed watching these games. I hardly even think about all the problems leading up to Rio. We're winning all the medals. We're having a good Olympics as a country. We've got a lot of memorable moments. There are more memorable moments to come. We're having legitimate sports conversations, which we will in a minute, like on USA basketball. Are they being coached correctly? What is wrong with them after three straight close wins when they should be rolling over their competition? Seems like the problems of Rio are there, but we're not quite noticing them, or they're not as big as we thought they were going to be. Take Olympic golf, for example. Rory McIlroy didn't want to go. Jordan Spieth didn't want to go. All these, Jason Day didn't want to go. All these golfers that skipped out on going to the golf, and they're all being told by the golfers that are there, whoa, you missed out. You blew this. You absolutely blew this. You should have been a part of this. This is one of the best things that ever happened in my career. We're talking Bubba Watson, who's won two Masters, Justin Rose, who's won a U.S. Open, Ricky Fowler, who's won the Players Championship and has been part of Ryder Cup teams. This is one of the greatest things they've ever done. Sergio Garcia didn't even come close to meddling and said it was one of the greatest things he's ever been a part of. And yet, what was the reasons all those guys didn't want to go to the Olympics and held at Olympics was all the reasons that I said earlier. There were so many problems. Lack of security, Zika virus. The city looked like it was on fire, for crying out loud. Nothing was going to be ready. There was deplorable conditions for those staying in the Olympic Village, like a lot of the golfers who are still multimillionaires did. And yet, not a word. Ricky Fowler didn't secretly say, you were right to stay home. This stinks. They want to do it again. They can't wait for Tokyo. All right, 800-777-2907. We're going to get to a couple of the problems that are prevalent in the Olympic Games, like the United States basketball team, for example. And I remember leaving the show on Friday saying, well, gee, shouldn't they roll over Serbia and shouldn't they roll over France? And they didn't, winning both games by just three. What is the problem with U.S. basketball? Is it coaching? Is it too much collection of talent and nobody knows a role? Has the world actually caught up? I don't think that's the case at all. We still are bringing not only NBA players, we're bringing some of the best NBA players. Granted, LeBron James isn't there. Steph Curry isn't there. Russell Westbrook isn't there. Neither is James Harden. I get it. There is a whole list of all-stars that are not prevalent at the Olympic Games. But to look at the situation with the United States and say, look, a close win over Serbia, Australia took them to the limit before the United States won by 10. France, who didn't have Tony Parker, almost won that game and got it to 3 points. Those are a great sign for the rest of the world. This is what the rest of the world has been waiting for, the moment that they can compete with the NBA players and the United States on the same level. Now, this is so untrue, it's unreal. Has the world gotten better? Of course it has. Because it's natural that when you start something where you bring in professionals, there's a lot of room. We're talking 20-plus years of room to work with in sort of refining that Olympic basketball team, the cohesiveness, all of those things. So, yeah, the world did get better, but the United States should have gotten better with it. And the United States is still far and away above the rest of the countries. They're just not producing the kind of results that we want. No, a 3-point win over France is not acceptable because France has caught up. That's not acceptable. So it's time to look at whether or not they're being coached correctly. It's time to look whether or not the players are in the wrong roles. It's time to look at whether or not the training has been just lackadaisical. Let's roll the ball out and play. And that would go to coaching. We'll discuss that a little bit more. Plus, Cam Newton has said something that many of us believed, but we're wondering if we're true. I'll tell you what he said next. I am Tony D. It is SB Nation Radio, 800-777-2907, on Twitter, at Tony D Radio.
This is the Tony D Show on SB Nation Radio. Here's your host, Tony DeZiri.
All right, coming up in 15 minutes, Thomas George is going to join us from SB Nation. We'll talk some NFL, another finishing round of preseason games, another one coming up this week. A couple of things to ask him about teams. We're previewing the Tennessee Titans in our countdown to kickoff preview. Our telephone number, 800-777-2907. So back to the Olympics. I watched steeplechase today, which I didn't know what it was. I got to tell you, as old as I get and as many of the Olympics that I watch, I should be more knowledgeable on certain events. I had no idea steeplechase was run and then leap over and land in water and then keep running. I had no idea. It was good, though. I mean, an American won bronze out of Colorado, but I didn't know what that was. So I'm trying to absorb all this as much as I can get. I like to know the sports I know, and, you know, some of the sports is relatively easy. But then there are sports where I go, all right, let me try to watch this and see if I can learn a little bit. Equestrian, I never got. Gymnastics, I like to watch, but I don't know how it's scored. I don't think I've ever known how it's scored. So there's still sports that I watch in the Olympic Games. I go, oh, this is neat. Like archery, for example. I watched archery and was fascinated by it from the standpoint of the bow. It wasn't like a bow like the Green Arrow uses. Like, it's a bow with a whole bunch of different sights, and it's a real neat contraption. And they were using that, and I said, that's cool to me. That is really cool, the archery. But again, I how much do they train? Who's who? Are we good at it? Those are the kind of things I'm still learning as I go with the Olympic Games. But the one thing I do know is basketball. I've been following basketball my whole life. And since the emergence of the Dream Team in 1992, my expectations for the United States are really, really sky high. Let down in Athens in 2004. Was glad that there was a redeem team in 2008 in Beijing. This version of this United States team seemed like it was going to cruise to gold. And when they were in all of their preliminary rounds and getting to the Olympics and the early stages of the games, but they went 5-0 in pool play. But the last three matches against Australia, Serbia, and France have been won by a combined point total of 16. That's not what I think about when I think United States basketball. Now, there's a couple of ways to look at this. One, is the world catching up? I said earlier, I don't think the world is necessarily there. Are they getting better? Sure, they are getting better. But that's natural when the goal is to get better, right? Countries who in 1992, when the Dream Team was put together, the countries that earlier had voted for it were looking ahead 20 years. We're looking ahead 25 years, looking ahead 30 years. No, it wasn't going to come in 92. Of course not. Nobody in the world thought that. Certainly wasn't going to come in 96. No one thought that either. 2000, etc. In fact, the United States didn't lose an international competition with its pros until 2002 in Indianapolis. So the reality is the world saw the long-term gain. The United States, and this is what I wonder, the United States can get complacent, meaning there's no bar that the United States can continue to go up. The Dream Team in 92 is arguably the greatest Olympic team ever put together. Okay? There is no other bar. The bar was set in 1992. It doesn't mean it goes down tremendously so that you pick the world up as it's moving up, but it also doesn't mean you get better. You're not going to have a dream team, for example, United States team, that is going to be better than the collection that they had in 1992. Why? Because guys are going to skip out. Guys don't necessarily see the importance of it. 92 was a real statement game. It was the NBA when they finally realized they could do something here. There was a marketing angle to it. It was going to be the greatest collection of basketball players. So guys really, really, really wanted to be on that list. Isaiah Thomas was really bitter about it because they knew it was historic. It was going to be something larger than anything that they were a part of internationally. That's not the case today. LeBron can go through a rigid, rough, all NBA finals run and not go to the Olympics, and everyone's cool with it, because why should he? Steph Curry, the same thing. Russell Westbrook, James Harden, anybody that skips out, it's okay now. So what you get is you get a United States basketball team that's never going to be over the bar, whereas the rest of the world's always moving up. The rest of the world is still developing players that the league takes in, that gets league experience, and gets better and more cohesive as a team, knowing what the standard is for Olympic basketball. But it doesn't mean we have to be coached bad. It doesn't mean we don't have to go out with any real true sets. I mean, the United States does have an attitude of roll out and play. There are guys who are off rolls. Klay Thompson, for example, isn't hitting a lot of shots. The United States basketball team could get beat in these Olympics, and it would be a real blow to them, but you can see it coming in the last couple of games. They're not particularly coached well because I don't think there's a way to really coach in them. This is not on Coach Mike Krzyzewski, because this is a collection of talent that all knows what they do in NBA during the NBA season on their particular teams, and it's hard for them to kind of be cohesive. Guess what they do to train for this thing? They roll out in Vegas, or they roll out in some place. It's just quick practices. We're going to go play some games. We're all friends in a way that we're all in the same league, and we kind of understand each other. But there is an all-star game mentality that comes into Team USA that the other countries don't have. And again, it's not a talent level thing. The United States is not coming down to a level, but the United States better be careful, because teams are climbing up and they feel as if the United States is vulnerable. I told this story last week. For those of you who remember the 92 Dream Team, the one thing that was great about it was that it was so internationally accepted and so fun for the rest of the world, even if they were getting slaughtered by 40 points. You would see the joy of the countries just going onto the court with Michael Jordan, Magic Johnson, Larry Bird, and the rest of those guys. It was a clear jubilation of, wow, look where we are. I'm guarding Michael Jordan. There isn't that now. There isn't that, because as basketball players have grown up, this is the expectation when you get on a national team of who you're going to play. Now you've got more NBA players in Olympic basketball, et cetera. It's disappointing for me because, again, this is our sport. This is the sport we're supposed to win. We're not supposed to play bad enough to lose like we did in 2004. I'd like to see us, if we get beat, to get beat because teams really did take the next step. Not after something like, well, we don't know our roles and we're kind of getting lazy and we're kind of not playing really good offensive sets or whatnot. It's really troubling. All right, 800-777-2907, 800-777-2907. Ryan Lochte apparently got held up at gunpoint at the Olympics. And in the story, he said that when the gunman pointed the gun and asked him to get down, he said, no, I've not done anything wrong. And then when he cocked the gun and pointed it to his head, Lochte said, whatever. You buying this story? I don't know if I'm buying this story. I got to think that that's something we all think we would say if a gun was pointed at us, but none of us would actually say if a stranger did point a gun at us. This makes Ryan Lochte look really good, but in a way it makes him look really bad. I think this is funny because the IOC denied that this story actually took place, but I actually believe it did happen.
Yeah, I believe a version happened. I don't think he said whatever.
Whatever. Whatever.
You don't just say that to somebody in Brazil when you know what happens in Brazil.
The biggest issue in the Olympic Games was crime.
Yeah.
Was crime. And Ryan Lochte's like, whatever. These guys could kill you.
Yes, there's legitimate psychos down there.
They want to kill you. Stop. All right, NFL, preseason week one is in the books. How did some of the teams do? Thomas George joins us from SB Nation next. It's Tony D, SB Nation Radio.
This is the Tony D Show on SB Nation Radio. Here's your host, Tony DeZiri.
Well, I don't put a lot of stock in a lot of preseason games. I still like to see guys in regular season, but there are some things to be excited about. When a player particularly plays well, you might feel like that position is secure. Maybe the Dallas Cowboys like what they see in Dak Prescott, who had a very, very good game against the LA Rams. Tony Romo didn't play at all, but Prescott went like 10 of 12 for like a buck 38 and two touchdowns. They'll probably still get a veteran quarterback, but nevertheless, those are things to be excited about. In all, what preseason does, it helps coaches evaluate players and see where they go, and then also fans get sort of that NFL juice going before the season actually starts. Thomas George joins us from SB Nation to talk some NFL. How are you, Thomas?
Well, Tony, and yourself?
Good. I appreciate your time. I want to ask about Dak Prescott and the Cowboys. Look, the Cowboys may still go after a veteran, but should they feel really good about what Prescott did in his first preseason game?
It's always dangerous to base the whole decision on one preseason game, so I wouldn't say you base it totally on that, but certainly he gave you a reason to look for more. And, you know, I'm not really surprised. I liked him coming out of college. I always thought that, you know, he had ability, and in the right system, he could do some things. And so that definitely bears watching for them. I'd like to see him play at least a couple more games before you make a decision like that, though.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting because they had problems with veteran backups last year. But is that position, for the Cowboys especially, with Romo's health, is that just too precarious to give to a rookie because they watched a whole season disappear because Romo was out?
Absolutely. I mean, he is truly the heart and soul of that team, and we can look no further than last year to see that clearly. And even when they played well and won the division, I think the year before that, He had another big year, and he just makes a lot of plays, winning plays, at least in the regular season, that make a difference. So I'm a big believer that, there are certain situations where youth is well served, and there are certainly times where you can flip the script a little bit and go off the beaten path and just see and trust in the fact that if you give a young quarterback enough help, he may be able to get you to places you didn't think you could get. And I think this young man, Prescott, may have that ability. We're just going to have to, again, wait and see and give him some more reps and give him some more looks. But if I were the Cowboys, I would not be afraid to move in that direction, not just based on youth as opposed to experience.
We're doing team previews every day to the end of this offseason, and what the team today is Tennessee. They have three running backs that scored touchdowns. DeMarco Murray's a new addition. Derrick Henry's there. They've had Bishop Sankey. Do you see the Titans going into the season as a primarily run team, despite the fact that they have Marcus Mariota and they would like to set him loose a little bit? How important is the run going to be in Nashville?
That's really a great question, because I just happened to be in camp there on last Thursday and got a chance to look at those guys up close and talk to Mike Mularkey about this subject. And the one thing you definitely notice when you watch them practice is there is an emphasis on physicality, and there is an emphasis on beating the man in front of you and on winning those matchups. And Mularkey made it very clear to me that he's a big believer in the fact that the physical battles lead to overall battles. It's from his time spent with the Pittsburgh Steelers as a tight end. He told me that when he was with the Vikings, they used to be one of the last teams into camp. They didn't hit until a week or two into camp. And then when he got with the Steelers for his career as a tight end, it was physical hitting every day. And when they got off the bus as it went into the season, people knew, hey, you're going to come and you're going to get smashed here. And he asked me, he goes, now one franchise won a few Super Bowls, the others won any. Which philosophy do you think I adopted? Well, he adopted the Steelers philosophy, and he's imparting that with the Titans as a cure-all and as a fix-it for the disarray they've been in the last seven seasons. So when you watch him practice, it's there. And when you watch Derrick Henry, he's big. I mean, you know, he just stands out, you know, as a guy who can take a pounding and deliver one also. So when you have him and then you have DeMarco Murray's flash to go along with it, inside as well as out, it's a great formula to use, and it's a winning formula, I believe, to use. And I think it's a team that carries out throughout training camps across the league. Even with the concussion issues as they are, and even with injury issues as they are, I think teams want to get back to blocking and tackling and not let the finesse nature of the passing game dictate everything they do.
Thomas George joins us, SB Nation, as we talk some NFL. I want to stay in the division because a team we've been waiting for over the last few years, Jacksonville, to sort of get that youth movement going, all those high draft picks to really come together and formulate into a good team. Reasonable expectation for Jacksonville. Is it to have a winning season? Is it to make a playoff push?
You know, before Tony Dungy was inducted as Hall of Fame, we had a chance to spend some time together, and that's his team. That's his surprise team. That's the team that he thinks is going to come out of nowhere and shock everybody and not only have a winning season, but maybe even make the playoffs. You know, when Tony Jacksonville, just when you say the name, just like you say,
right,
a lot of teams and a lot of sports, you know, just their name indicates you have to get over the imagery of how futile they've been and how pitiful they've been just to even think that they're on the verge of something great. But with the youth they have, particularly across the defense and in the offense, and Bortles back another year under his belt, I mean, you've got to think that they may be close to turning the corner, but they are like a lot of teams who are trying to flip that switch. You just can't say until they do it.
Thomas, I want to ask about the Patriots real quick because I know that with Tom Brady out, Jimmy Garoppolo is going to be in for four games, and I would assume that they're going to be okay, but is there concern about where the Patriots will go in the first month of the season?
There has to be concern because, you know, Tom Brady is the whole ball of wax, you know, that whole thing is built on, and for good reason. I mean, he has produced in a manner that makes him the whole ball of wax. However, you know, they have a system and they have a belief in the way they want their quarterback to play beyond Brady. And Josh McDaniels is perfectly suited as a guy, I think, to tinker and tutor Garoppolo. And Garoppolo is hungry and he's a studious quarterback and he will do everything that he's asked to do in an exponentially specific way. And I think that gives them a chance because he is not going to be a freelancing quarterback. He's going to follow the letter of the rule. And if you believe in the Patriots scheme, and if you believe in McDaniel's play calling and his tutelage, and then you also plug in a player who is going to follow the lead, I think it gives them an excellent chance. Again, he's going to have to perform and he's going to, you know, nobody knows what's going to happen with him in the fourth quarter in a 2-minute drill if they happen to be in a game where they need a score to win. And I think that's just all part of the beauty and all part of the process of it all. I don't think anybody is willing to stand up and say the Patriots are going to go 0-4. They've just been too consistent and they've won in too many ways to say that. However, they are going to be challenged and there are people who are going to come after Garoppolo and it's going to be up to them, I think, the defense to do more and for McDaniels to figure out a way to accentuate the positives of Garoppolo while also staying within the scheme of what he wants to do. It's a very interesting mix, but no staff is more suited to handle it than the Patriots.
Thomas George, SB Nation on the NFL. Appreciate your time, my friend. Thank you so much. Great stuff.
Anytime. Anytime, Tony. Have a great afternoon.
Yeah, good point on Dak Prescott. Again, he played really well. He lied 10 of 12, 138 yards, 2 touchdowns, one of those to Dez Bryant. Highly complimentary of Prescott's ability. I like Dak Prescott coming out, but this is a position that is really, you got to do that right. The backup quarterback position has to be handled right if you're Dallas because of the window. You can make the argument, well, Tony, they brought in a couple of veteran guys and they didn't get the job done last year when Romo went down. But still, the formula isn't to just have a rookie standing by waiting to go in to keep the Cowboy train running. I know we've seen surprises, but is that really what the Cowboys want to do? I know they're going to end up getting a veteran guy and he's not going to play well and the fan base is going to lose. At that point, I think you go Dak Prescott. At that point, you say, okay. But one preseason game, and all of a sudden he's got the number 2 slot locked up. I don't know. I doubt it. I think the Cowboys are smart here. I still think they go after a veteran. I don't think they have to overpay for one. I don't think they have to go out there and snag one and sort of bring a guy in that's going to cost them, because I think Dak Prescott is going to be a guy that they're going to like down the road, even though one preseason game doesn't tell us a whole lot. All right, coming up next, we'll talk a little baseball, the historic game on Saturday for the Yankees, and my hometown observation. I'll tell you what that is coming up next. It's Tony D here on SB Nation Radio.
This is the Tony D Show on SB Nation Radio. Here's your host, Tony DeZiri.
All right, glad to be with us here on SB Nation Radio. This segment brought to you by Wrangler. Wrangler Advanced Comfort Jeans designed to keep you up with you no matter where you're going or what you're doing. They're made with 20% stronger denim and four-way flex technology that moves with you. Wrangler Advanced Comfort Jeans. Try on a pair today. All right, so Saturday I had a chance to go to my first baseball game as a fan in a long time. I spent the last 5 years in Nashville, there's no Major League Baseball team there. I covered a lot of Colorado Rockies games when I was in Denver for 10 years, but I rarely went as a fan. So I had to go back almost 10 years to where I went, wore a hat, got a hot dog, grabbed a beer, had a fun time sitting in the stands. And I went to the Yankee game in the Bronx on Saturday to see them play Tampa Bay. And I brought my son, and it was a great father-son moment. You know, that's that whole baseball nostalgic feeling. It was fantastic. We took the train up to Yankee Stadium, went in, watched the game. And while we were sitting down, it was a very, very, very hot day. Very, very hot. And I love being able to go to the ballpark and see history. Every time I'd go to a Rockies game, I wanted to see a no-hitter. You know, a perfect game would be great, but I wanted to see a no-hitter. I wanted to see a four-home-run game or somebody hit for the cycle. I always root for those kind of things. I think most of us do. And for the Yankees, I got to see something that I don't think has ever happened in the history of baseball. I watched two guys get home runs in their first at-bats in back-to-back at-bats, which I got to believe has never happened before. Tyler Austin of the Yankees got his first ever hit, and his first ever at-bat was a home run. Right after that, Aaron Judge came to the plate, first Major League Baseball at-bat. He also got a home run. So that was really, really cool. But I thought one of the interesting things was that we were all sitting around, and we kind of got to know each other. It was father and his daughter and older husband and wife. We were all kind of talking and having a good time. And in the first inning, Corey Dickerson came up for the Tampa Bay Rays. Might have been the second inning, or his first at-bat of the game. So you know how they have the screen and they tell you, like, the player and his age and where he's from and his height and weight and all that stuff is on the screen?
Right.
Well, Corey Dickerson is from Macomb, Mississippi, right? So I told my son, and enough for people around me to hear, I said, wow, I don't know where Macomb, Mississippi is, but that's got to be a really small town. I said, can you imagine being a Major League Baseball player from that town? Like, going back, like you're 25, 26, you go back to your small town in Mississippi. You must be a larger-than-life hero when you go back, right? All the teachers you had in high school, all the girls you tried to date, the guy that gave you your first job, the neighbors. Now you're a multimillionaire baseball player, and you come to this small town. They must throw you a parade. Right? So we were all talking about that. What's it like to come from a small southern town when you've made it big? And it was kind of neat. Now, this is where the story I thought was amusing. The second at bat comes, he comes up to the plate, and the Yankee scoreboard operator puts up a fun fact about Macomb, Mississippi. And on it, he says, the town is located in the southern part of the state on the border of Louisiana, has 13,000 people, much to my, you know, right? I was right on the money. Here is where it goes off the rails. The town boasts these celebrities: Bo Diddley, Brandy, and Britney Spears. Not to mention four or five blues artists, Gerard Dyson of the Kansas City Royals, Cooper Carlisle, formerly of the NFL, Jackie Butler, formerly of the NBA, and Jimmy Boyd, singer, musician, and actor. He's not even in the top 10 of famous people from Macomb, Mississippi.
So nobody cares when Corey Dickerson comes
nobody
back.
Nobody cares. There will be no parade
right
for Corey Dickerson when he shows up. And LaPortia Renee, American Idol finalist, is also from Macomb, Mississippi. In fact, Macomb, Mississippi has its own Wikipedia entrance of all the famous people that have come from that town.
So basically, Corey Dickerson is not famous.
Corey Dickerson is he's not only not famous, he's average.
Right.
As if when Corey Dickerson is in the goes back home, they go, oh, well, baseball player, Tampa Bay, no less. Like, that doesn't even register of the famous people from this small town. Look, First of all, if you come from a town where Bo Diddley is the star, then you're always second, right? That's going to be, no matter what you do, you're going to be second. Bo Diddley is, that's a legendary celebrity. But you can make fun of her all you want, but Britney Spears is an international superstar. You ain't cracking that at all either. Not only that, Jamie Lynn Spears, you're probably not going to crack above her anyway. I mean, the level of celebrity that you would have to get as a small baseball player in Tampa, you can't even crack the list of people from that town. So we all got a really good chuckle about the fact that we all were admiring the hometown greatness of Corey Dickerson to only realize he comes from probably the largest, most popular small town in America. That was my fun time at the Yankee Stadium. By the way, remember I told you before I went to the game that I would eat like something crazy?
Right.
I ate my son and I split a bucket of chicken and fries that came in an actual bucket. We could not find anything off the wall. But that was pretty good, like a big bucket of chicken and fries. And we also got Dippin' Dots, which, by the way, when is Dippin' Dots just going to be not the ice cream of the future? Hasn't it been the ice cream of the future for 25 years?
Yes, since I was a little kid.
Since I was a little kid, it's the ice cream of the future. Yeah, okay, I know, but I've been eating this stuff at ball games for the last.
It's the future now.
Years.
You should just be the ice cream.
I was like a little kid, though, when they reached the 96 team came out on the field. I was like a child. I was screaming and yelling and pointing all. My kid must have thought I was a lunatic because I would point out every single Yankee that came out. I was telling him what he did in the playoffs in the World Series. You're going to get like this, too. When they honor the 2005 White Sox, your kids, you're going to take them to some ceremony. You watch, Adam. You're going to do the exact same thing. You're like, he hit a home run in game two. Oh, and he took a 3-2 pitch to the opposite side of the field and drove
in
two runs
definitely.
In game four. You're going to totally do that because I did that, and my kid looked at me like, all right. He even texted my wife, dad's acting like a child.